we're taping today is October 15th, Great Biblical Personalities. We're analyzing Moshe and Shmos Perkeis Pasukim Aleph, where I'm comparing this to a pasuk in Parshas Bereishis, where I think we can find a milat mancha in this one pasuk that says Ve'emar Kayin al Hevel Ochiv Vayehi Behiyotam Basadeh Ve'emar Kayin al Hevel Ochiv Vayehi. I stress the words here because milat mancha is a word that appears at least once, but usually more than once, usually quite a bit more than once, over a whole paragraph. But here in one pasuk, the word for brother, I know they're brothers. This pasuk would have read the same without those two words. It could just as easily say, "Ve'erman kain al hevel, ve'ibi otam b'sedav ve'erman kain al hevel ve'argeihu." Right, common. So the extraneous echov must be accounted for in your commentary. Yes.
So I think can I get an answer?
What do you think right away? Yeah.
Because this Moshe obviously was his baby and was taken into Pharaoh's palace, and so he's raised Egyptian, and this is stressing that somehow, somewhere in his mind, it clicked for the first time that these are my brothers.
Right.
And he gives it the first time realizing it, and the Torah is now stressing that.
The text doesn't tell you how he came to that knowledge.
It doesn't.
But Ramban says he took thing that someone told him. You see the movie The Ten Commandments. Remember that woman that met a shipwreck boat. And so, look at this pasuk. Here's a short pasuk, but it's so clear what this pasuk is trying to add to it. It says, "Vayishma Batsheva ki meit." I'm sorry. Batsheva, the name doesn't appear in the pasuk. It says, "Vayit Batishma Eshet Uriah." He made Ba'alo He made Uriah Isha But he spoke Al Ba'alo. You see what this person is trying to bring home? Say about his Shema Batsheva, he made Uriah about his Bedeu. I mean, this pasuk is trying to bring home how dastardly the whole thing was by this point. Right? Okay, so the biblical reader has to be sensitive to these extraneous words. But my point is that it's not even. It's sure. It's a chog to stress this, but keep going. Moshe looked this way and that way, but he saw no man. Is that how you would say it? Just speak very innocently in English. He looked this way and that way. What would you say?
He looked around to see if no one was around.
No one was looking. Is there something deeper going on here?
There was no one doing anything about it.
Correct. No ish. Have you ever staying in Pirkei Avos like this?
Uncle Shane is just out of the
way. Yes. There's no doubt that mission in Pirkei Avos is taken by Miss Muslims. Right? You hear it? Bayaki ain't ish. You didn't see a mesh. There's no one acting like a man. Now go back to the last Muslim and see what's going on there. See here, the lots of pets and males with XY chromosomes. But there's no one behaving like a mensch.
So I guess he then felt the connection, felt that like I have to do something.
Yeah, good, you know. Now it could be because he thinks that these are my back brothers, my home brothers. You know, people who are standing here, we saw some guys fight out the street there. You're gonna favor the it's between someone in the yeshiva and someone who lives in the neighborhood. You're gonna favor your homeboy no matter what, right? And then you're not gonna take him on the shoulder and say, "Well, what's this argument about?" You're gonna defend your guy, right?
Right.
Okay. I'm just saying what's normal, what's expected, right? So
So so Einstein, he sees an injustice. Injustice is perpetrated against one of his echov. Now, when he looks this way and that way, what's he looking for? Just your first impression.
To see if anyone's around that would witness him killing the injured child. He's the prince of Egypt.
Okay, but don't be too influenced by the movie. Thank you, man.
Right. No, so he just
practically has to be the Kolochon in the first place is because he if there is an Egyptian looking, I really can't do this. It seems that it's premeditated. What I'm about to do to him, I don't want to do if someone is there. That seems to be the pshat. But the Vayarki Ish seems to put a burden upon us to say, no, if that's all it is, it just wants to see if anyone's looking, the Torah should have said that in a much simpler way. Vayarki Robeh. Alright, but that's the simple pshat. If the Kolochon Vayarki Ish is looking, alright, no one's watching this act of insubordination or the like, so I'm going to go to the Yachas on Mitzri, but it's been able. The Torah uses the ambiguous Vayach as opposed to Vayaharog. We know he did kill him because he buried him. You wouldn't bury a living man, right? So Vayach as a Mitzri means that he killed him. The Makeh in the previous pasuk doesn't necessarily mean that they're beating to death. But in Egypt, if an Egyptian master would beat a slave to death, it's probably nothing to pay for that. Big deal. Jewish life is cheap, you know. So, otherwise, would you be surprised to find a Maimar Chazal that says that Moshe is blamed for taking this life?
Taking
this Egyptian life. Because there is a Medrash, it's called Medrash Petiris Moshe. Chamalevitz brings it out in his studies in the Parsha. And there's a Medrash that says that when Moshe begged to get into Israel, he said, God, have mercy, at least let me get into Israel by your mercies. And he goes, well, you didn't have mercy on the Egyptian that you killed. Why should I have mercy on you? So Hashem just said, well, Moshe can answer, come on, God, I was just saving his life. No, you weren't. He wasn't going to kill them. Right? Okay, let's go on. He went out the second day and he saw two Jewish men fighting. He didn't say Bayomer, quote, Rosha, Lomatake, no, Bayomer, Rosha, it's the text calling him a Rosha. Lomatake, why will you hit? Not Lomamake, Lomatake, he didn't hit him yet. Right? Got it? In this story, I think we'd be free to say that the Take doesn't mean why you're killing him, why you're beating him. Right? The first instance, it's ambiguous. I don't know what
he didn't intend on killing him.
See, the word makeh is ambiguous. Right. For instance, when it says makeh aviv imo mos yumos, there it doesn't mean to kill, because you kill anybody. Makeh just means to beat. Right? Kol horei kayin shibosayim yukam. Right? And it says right afterwards, kol makeh. Right after Horeg in parallel, means that sometimes Makeh can mean to kill. Sometimes it means just to beat. In the second instance, it obviously means to kill. In the third instance, it probably does not mean. He says, why? It doesn't mean, why are you killing your friend? Why? He says, why Lama Takeh means, why are you hitting me? Don't we have enough trouble with the Egyptians hitting us? You have to hit them too? But the reason why I say it's ambiguous in the first instance is because the reader has to live with the fact that Moshe took a life, his first act as in the public eye, and that's what, you know, that's why it got this reaction. Remember, me some halish sar v'shofet olena. Who put you in charge of us? Halahargeini atomer. Now he uses the word har. Not hamakeini atomer. Halahargeini atomer, which is not as ambiguous as makeh. Halahargeini atomer kasher raktes amitzri. You're a hypocrite. You're telling me not to beat when you killed. Who's a killer telling someone not to hit? So we remember, but you run Moshe. Why is Moshe afraid? What's he afraid of? Egyptians will know. What's the thing that's known? That I killed. And you wouldn't disagree with that, right? Alright? We'll have to deal with that. Okay, what is the Milat Mancha? We haven't said it yet. What is the word that appears in these five psukim? It appears in various forms 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And let's go back and read the psukim. What's the word?
One of the Vayar's, one of the Ish.
I like the Vayar's also. Vayar is very important.
But it's a different Vayar, so it's some Vayar.
It's part of a different framework that you have it by Abraham. It says Vayar v'Neishne and Hashem.
Yeah.
And then again Vayar v'Yoreth v'Rosam. A deeper vision.
Okay.
I think it's the word ish. And plus, in order to be a true milat malchut like this, the pasuk has to be read just ever so slightly differently without a word. Right? In other words, if you take away vayar, what do you have? I mean, what am I going to say? Is that what are you going to write? Okay? But you can read. You should be able to read Bayar Mitzri Make Ivri. Bayar Ki Eiro E. Behine Shne Ivrim Nitzim. Mi Somchol Asar Vishopet Dolein. You see, in all five instances of the word Ish, I didn't need it there. This is what the concept of Bilat Mancha affords us if we want to be really. You see, someone like Rashi doesn't really notice this. Because in order to work with Milat Mancha, you have to be the sort of bigger picture kind of Prashami, or Ramban kind of Prashami. Comments on 5 psukim in one comment, 12 psukim in one comment. Actually, it's more of a, you know, word by word, a smaller picture kind of Prashami. Right? The larger picture of Prashami, like a Kli Yoko, who does this a lot, says that as Moshe emerges from his castle for the first time, humanity is at the crossroads. The human beings have been turned into beasts of burden to fulfill the desires of other human beings. Like they're busy working, toiling in fields to produce food that they will never eat. They are busy making these infinite amount of bricks for huge structures in which they will never live or never have glory. And what does this mean to mankind? And that mankind, to the day you're reading this pasuk, would forever have been different if this man didn't come out that day. I'm just giving you a sermon here. This is the shot of why you have all this word ish. It's that enoshiut is at the crossroads here. And mankind would forever look different if this one man did not come out there and challenge what they consider to be. Just, of course, these are just Hebrews. Yeah, but you just killed that woman's son. She doesn't care. She's a Hebrew. So that's with all this stuff, okay? These extra word usages of the word ish. Right? Okay, we'll see this kind of thing happening again and again. We'll see it with Yeshua, we'll see it with some of our other characters. Alright, but let's go back. And see what it says, Vayar Bistiv Losam? Do you see a substantive difference between Vayar Bistiv Losam and Vayar Esiv Losam?
He felt their pain.
Read Rashi.
Nelson Hena Felipe Leos
Mitzah. Yeah, I mean, what is Rashi teaching us? He's telling us what is the difference talking between Bistiv Losam and Esiv Losam. Es is just, I see those candies. You are visible sometimes. I can see it in your face. I see, you know. Okay. So good. We have the ish mitzri makeh ishivri. We have the ambiguity of the three uses of makeh. Ishivri, ish mitzri makeh. Vayachas ha-mitzri. Halakha. Lama takeh reyecha. And the Bible is purposely using the choice of word of makeh to be rather ambiguous about the first usage. Second time I know it means to kill. The third time I'm pretty sure it doesn't mean to kill. I don't think those two Hebrews are killing each other. Right? what's interesting is that Moshe continues to he has to leave his place because of this, right? Right. I just want to digress for a moment to talk about Rashi on Vayirovu Shevi Omar Afinu Dehadavar. Right? Look at Vayirovu Moshe. See what Rashi writes? David, can you read it? Did go on still in 1939.
it's
not for it.
It's crazy though, because if you see that's how it sort of is, and it's like it never changes. Like,
yeah, yeah, and I know we have to put on a united front about Iran, but if that rabbi's coming on the trip, I'm not coming. You know, that's going on. It's still going on. Alright? So Rashi maybe actually, this is a whole topic in Rashi in itself. Does Rashi do this kind of thing where he takes he sterminizes like this? Alright, repeat it as it may. Let me just get a programmatic change of why, and this is, I know this is bit with the personality, but let me take this opportunity to teach a certain methodology in Rashi. Why he purposely wrote Kishuto in the first one and Kimashmo in the second one. You see it in front, you started it, right? If Kimashmo means like the meaning of the words, right? What are the meaning of this of the second Rashi? Now the thing is known. That's what Achein Nodah Dabar means, Kimashmo, right?
Yeah.
Now usually in Rashi's Perush to the Torah, he will bring a drash if the pshat is not kimashma, like al dvar sar. Here Rashi is doing the opposite of what he usually does, and he has to tell you that he's doing it. By saying kimashma, he's saying that the drash I'm about to tell you is not kimashma. Because what does he say the drash? If you read the drash, you have to do it to the mitra show. You just gave the answer. According to the drash, what should the pasuk say? Ochein noda li hadavar, or maybe more biblically, ochein yodati hadavar. In other words, the drash he brings in the second instance does not capture the essence of what's written in the passage.
Well, why the first drash is he kipshuto?
Because in the first drash, the drash and the pshat are both the same. Vayirah Moshe. Moshe was afraid. Whether he's afraid that my people don't deserve to be redeemed, or whether he's afraid that people know that I got killed. Now I'm going to be in trouble. They're both captured by the word by the words by Yirah Moshe v'Yomah. So I can say Kipshuto, and the Drash is also Kipshuto. But what I'm about to say is Kimashma'o, because the Drash afterwards is not Kimashma'o. I know that the Drash is not Kipshuto, but in the second page it's also not Kimashma'o. Right? Huh?
Yeah.
Only the Pshat is Kimashma'o, but in the second case the Drash is not. He had to change his words around. The methodology. Okay. So, and it continues. Look what happens next. The Shema Paros at the Borba, it's at the Kishva Rogis Moshe, the Rath Moshe, the Paro, the Shepherd, the Spidon, the Yeshiva Halabeher. Now, I don't want to comment on this passage. L'choy Midyon Sheva Banos, Batavona, Batidlen, Batimalena, Eserotim, Ashkos, Tzon, Abihen. And again, there's trouble. Moshe just finds trouble. Now, let's build a chart here. The trouble can fit every possible.
Let's call it Yehudi, Ainu Yehudi. I know they're not Yehudi, they're Hebrew, but let's just call it that. You have every possible combination. Right? In the first story, you have, right? Yishivri being beaten by the nun. Right, so I said that I told you about 10 minutes, 15 minutes ago. I understand Moshe sides with his homeboy. He doesn't know it's his homeboy for too long, right? The Greek Kiddush is that until now, his homeboy was the Egyptian beating him.
Yeah.
Until that day.
Yeah.
And yet, he finds out that same day, he finds out that he's a Hebrew, and he all of a sudden, because Moshe is not favoring who's right. Not favoring because of their background. He's favoring the weaker one. This is the story that's going to determine one that Moshe is going to be our redeemer. Maybe not lawgiver, but he'll be. Right? The second story, you've got two of these. And the third story, you've got two of these. Okay? So in the second story, I understand. Right? You have an A and a B. You've got two A's and two B's. There's every possibility of A and B. Right? Second story, I also have two Hebrews. I have no reason to favor one over the other. But well, who does he parade? The one who's handling. Lama Zakere, what's his name? That guy. It's not looking at the guy getting beaten. Maybe the guy getting beaten was sleeping with the other guy's wife. It's maybe that Lama Zakere. Sorry. But maybe the guy getting beaten deserves to get beaten. I don't know. Right? So, Moshe doesn't tap anyone so soon. Why are you hitting? You shouldn't be hitting him enough already. I'm not going to stand for it.
Okay, now in the third story, here's where you can think Moshe should say to himself, stop getting involved in other people's business. If you could mind your own business, you'd still be living in the palace. And he sees something wrong. He sees this pasuk in Zion is a syntactical nightmare. Explain. Look, come on. What's the syntactical problem? Because in Hebrew, masculine and feminine go differently, right? So in one pasuk, I know that these are women being chased away because the previous pasuk said so, and it says Vayoshion nun. Women get a nun, men get a man, right? So, but it says Vayoh haRoim Vayogorshum, as if though they're chasing away men. And then, to make matters worse, at the end of the pasuk it says Vayashkes Tzonam, as if though they're men again. So why go for men? Just keep them all with men while you're at it. Why do you have to say men, nun, men? And when they come home, and the father asks him, who was it? They know who he is. But Tomar Ish Mitzri Yitzilon Yehoroim. Is that because he told them? Is it because they just assumed that by the way he's dressed? This is why Chazal pointed to this for why he didn't get buried in Israel. Because he was identified as Nish Mitzri as opposed to Yosef. When he was asked what had to get him, he said, Gonovu Nafti Meheret Sakifrid. Yosef, who identifies as a Hebrew, gets to be buried in Israel. Moshe, who identifies as an Egyptian, even if it's not based on something he said, but on something he was just recognized. Because I'll say that he spoke to them. After all, he is an Egyptian. He's born in Egypt. I mean, he should have said he's a Hebrew, maybe. Did he know they were Midianites? Hebrews and Midianites are pretty close. Midian is one of the sons of Amram. Midianite is a type of Hebrew. Alright, but anyway, that's all they said, Ish Mitzri. The Chazal insists that that was because of the conversation. He spoke to them. See, in the first story, he doesn't talk at all. He just smites. Second story, he says, tries to make peace between them. Third story, he chats. Moshe is advancing a little bit. But what's important here is that, you see, here I understand. But the weaker one is my home. Here, I have no reason to play favorites, but they're both my homeboys, so I'm going to get involved. Here, Moshe can possibly say, I've had it with getting Mishnayim in people's business. I'm staying out of this one. Let them kill each other. Let them blow up each other. And I'm why should I maybe, why should I favor these? But Moshe, what guides Moshe in all three stories is that he is favoring the weak. And that's what I need in the Redeemer. What's interesting, look, when God is about to appear to Moshe, he says, who am I that you should... And the reader also wants to know, what is it about him? I don't know. He didn't tell me he's a tzaddik yet. I don't know anything about him. Do I know about his abilities as a prophet or anything like that? All I have is one puzzle. Vayinhag Moshe Satzon Achar HaMidbar. Chazal, oh boy, why was he Achar HaMidbar? The sheep escaped and he ran after it. The Gemara says something similar about David. And when he caught up to it, he saved it from dying of a miserable death of thirst and hunger in the desert. Hashem said, that's the man I want to be redeemer. He has such compassion even for animals. Right? Or that he went Achar HaMidbar, the Yitrachet Minah Gezer. Have you heard that? He didn't want to take it belonged to someone nearby, so he went way far out where it's everything is heavy. Achar HaMidbar says the Sforno, Lehit Bodeid, to be alone, to be a spiritual person. He's Bodeidus. Alright, so the reader has to see some points about Moshe. On number 5 on your Choveret, there is an article by Schneer Lyman called The Portrait of Moses. Let me hear a medrash about an Arabic king at the time of Moshe who hears about his greatness and wants to meet him. He doesn't have enough time.
He has a painted man.
Yeah, he's painted. He gets a sculpture. So he commissions a sculpture of Moshe and he takes it to the physiognomists to determine from his physical features, you know, what type of person he is. So when the physiognomists, this isn't the art that's still studying today, the physiognomists look at him and they say, this man is a murderer. This man is given to every vice. So the king says, you know, I don't know what I'm paying you guys for. I hear he's a great man. So he's, when he finally has a chance to meet Moshe, he takes a bust of his face and puts it right next to his exact likeness. He wants to kill the physiognomist for making a mistake of the likeness. And Moshe says, don't touch them. Everything they said about me is true. I'm given to all of that behavior. I even committed some of that behavior. But what I have done is I've used my own personal struggles and my own decision making and my own associations to become as good a person as I can be. This source appears in the Teferis Yisrael at the end of Maseches Kedushin. It's brought down by the Shita Mekubetzes and Maseches Nedarim. It doesn't really have an earlier source than that. They all write, I saw it in the Medrash. Probably not an original Jewish source. The source appears with Cicero, it appears with Socrates. Whether those are based on the original Jewish source or not, I doubt. Because it's just not a Jewish idea. It's nice because the Chassidim love it. When the Mishnayos were first printed in Israel in the 50s, the head of the Jewish education program in Israel, his name was Maimon, refused to allow this Midrash to be printed on the left page of the Sefer Kedushin. Alright, but you see that because they, you know, but Tireu Ki Tovu. But I think the reader of Chumash can see that Moshe does struggle. If there's one midah, he struggles very much with its anger. Right? Moshe acts on the moment. What made him kill the Egyptian, Rabban writes? He was given to impulsive behavior. He saw this thing. The first Moshe, everybody. You know what everyone else watches? Is he watching him getting beaten and they're just going about their business?
They see it
all the time. This is a common thing. Come on, what are you talking about? He's not going to kill him. This is just every day. Well, it's the first time I'm seeing it, and I don't like it. Right? This is what they do. This is what you do. You kill Jews. You beat Jews. I just want to conclude for today with one very, very interesting exercise. It's an exercise that is mentioned. I don't think I have it on the Chuvaret. Yeah, I do. It's like reading Drama Walter, the artificial narrative, front page. It's on reserve. I have a couple of copies in my office. It's a short little book. The guy's still alive. He's a big old guy. I was in 1986. I ran the it's called the Toro Mata Project. It's gracious, 29 years ago. It's crazy how it's like yesterday. And we got him to speak at the school.
Robert Alter.
What?
Spoke here.
Yeah. So I ordered 10,000 flyers. Boxes from the dorm rooms. We sent it out to every graduate of alumni of YU. We didn't have even emails, and you had to mail everything. We had a budget for publicity like that. And to my horror, I next told him to give the title over the phone to the person who makes the flyers. I don't make the flyers, I just give the order. And to tell the guy giving the speech, give your title over the phone, or however you give it. You give it. You give it to me, I give it to them. Give it directly. Right? The title that appeared on the flyer was this. Actually, we still have one of the original flyers. So, you know, it's one of the chapters of this book is truth and poetry in the book of Job. He speaks with a very strong German accent. So over the phone, it sounded like truce. Truce and poetry in the high-pitched voice in the book of Job. So, and they wrote the flyers with the word truce instead of truth. Anyway, so in his introduction to the Art of Biblical Narrative, he talks about trends in the Bible. There's a lot of stuff written in there. Trends in the Bible. This is someone who's a teacher named David Sykes. He was spoken about, what was he last year, remember? David Sykes?
I was in Israel last year.
Oh, right, right, true. So there's still, you know what, there's a big poster with his face on it in the lobby. Just get some of those posters from last year.
Yeah.
It's a big, long black beard. You see it. He's the teacher at YU. He's out of mind. And he just came out with a book last year on trends and patterns in Torah. Like 400, 500 pages. So Robert Alter he didn't make it up, but Robert Alter writes about the trends of certain biblical characters. He writes a series of biblical characters. For instance, he talks about sibling rivalries and Horatius. He talks about barren women. He talks about women who meet their spouses at a well, and things like that. And he shows how that we build off one off the other. In that last example, for instance, he says that of the three women who meet the destiny of a well for whom they will marry, he says that the three of them act very differently. That one is extremely active and deserves everything. One is extremely passive and just lets whatever happen. And one is somewhat in the middle. And he says that whatever the woman does at the well will be indicative of what we can expect to see from them for the rest of their lives. They're setting the stage for their life at this well. So who's the one that acts most? Rivka. So she changes Jewish history with her sons. Right? Sipora does nothing. She just is saved, and she's just standing there being saved, and doesn't even invite the guy home. At least Rachel is. But, right, Rachel's related. She's not. Still, she just goes home. If not for, the fact that they came home early that day, and then they just go about their business, and he doesn't know where to go. Right? And in the middle is Ruth. Ruth, at least, is mentioned in Yahweh, but Sipora is not mentioned yet, even in the whole Torah. She's not mentioned, not in Va'era, not in Pinchas,
unless
not in Divrei Yomim.
Unless the Kanani
her.
But.
Yeah, right. So this is the what Robert Alter does with the three women. So what I like to do is something similar. He doesn't do this, but I think this is an interesting thing, is that the three stories of Moshe, one involving saving the Hebrew, one involving getting involved with the two Hebrews, and one involved with separating the Rohim from the women, are indicative of three different roles Moshe will play in the rest of the Torah. Here they are. And in two, he's quite successful. One, he's not so much. Not as much as we'd like. Because in these three stories, he has an objective the first time saving the Hebrew, get these two Hebrews to stop fighting, and save the weaker one in the third story. Right? In the first story, he succeeds. Saves the Hebrew, right? Because one of the things Moshe has to do is to protect his people. He protects them admirably with Paro. He protects them even against God's wrath a number of times in the Torah, right? Right. The third story he has to deal with Klapechutz. When it comes to anything Klapechutz, it's directly with Paro, even if it doesn't have to do with his people, or Sichon, or Og, or whoever it is. Moshe is there. Business quickly dispatches whatever he has to do outside of his own camp. But the middle doesn't have such a good ending. See, one imagined that if Aaron was in the second story, he might have done things differently. Wouldn't have said, "Yomer l'Roshul Mesekiri." He would go over and say, "You know what? You're hitting him up. You wouldn't say that." You go to the other one. That goes very nothing about Aaron and these people. Moshe just goes out his own business. Yomer l'Roshul Mesekiri. And he's MS. MS doesn't know from making up stories to get people together. It's Moshe. What can I say? It's Moshe. That's why Moshe gets an Aaron in the middle of the story. Right? We're developing the character of Moshe in this story. And we're finding out that there's going to be some And Rashi, I think, feels that this is the Rashi that I gave you to read. That's why when Rashi looks at these chicken here, about go back to Egypt, whoever wants to kill you is dead. Who do you think that is? A family of Egyptian killed, maybe? Paro, he says, but Kate, my vacation, I'm so, and it says in between the Paro died. Instead, what does Rashi say? The two Jews were fighting. And he names them, even though they were alive later in Bamidbar. Mr. Kvetch had an answer for that. More in the Dara, man, in Anami, but why does Rashi with all this Behindu Yaminu Liga? Moshe realizes his weakness is I don't feel comfortable in Shul. My back isn't scarred like theirs. The one day I went out to see what they were like, that's the day I escaped them. I have one day in my whole life in their midst. They don't trust me. Even though Yaminu Liga, Moshe feels himself inadequate before the people. That's why one pasuk it says the Yaminu Hashem of Moshe Avdo, Moshe Hashem Moshe Israel. It's uncanny how Rashi picks up on this sense of inadequacy that Moshe feels of his place clapping his nation. The second story, what I did with it, like what Robert Altman does pretty well, is that the three stories are indicative of where Moshe is going the rest of the talk. The middle story is like Korach, it's what he has to face amongst his people. His message says that Yirmiyahu begged God, God, they don't believe me, they don't trust me. Can't you give me a magic staff to prove to them that you sent me? So Hashem tells him, I gave one of those to Moshe, it didn't help him so much. Right? So if they don't want to trust you, they I'm not going to change their minds with a magic staff. Alright? Okay, we're not quite finished with Moshe, I still want to do a little more, but make sure to do this now. Read these six Rashis. Right? And you'll see that there's a trend going on with them. Okay? And now we'll go back to Yoshua. Alright, so Yoshua, look for the Milat Mancha in Paragawa of Yoshua. You'll find it. It might be two of them, it might be two phrases, it might be one word, but especially the Milat Mancha will present itself as soon as you start reading Yoshua Paragraph. You don't have to get too far.
Eved Hashem?
Sorry, what?
Eved Hashem? I remember it. I'm not looking at it.
Even better. Eved Hashem appears two or three times, but a word appears 13 times in Paragraph.
Is this an account of Torah's?
Well, if you look, you get it.